Hi, this is Stacey Whittle. Welcome to Teoti Talks. Today I will be speaking with Ronit Avni, who is a woman that I have come to know and respect without knowing her that well. The way I would describe you is a mother, an entrepreneur, a kind soul who really seeks to ensure that you're leaving the world a better place for your daughter. It's hard with people who have so many different talents, like what to focus on. But I think for me, what I'm most curious about right now is the organization Localized.
Yeah.
So if you could talk a little bit about that, but feel free to talk about whatever you want.
So first of all, thank you, Stacey. And it's great to meet you and to get to know the amazing work that you're doing to share these kinds of stories. So I am the founder and CEO of a startup called Localized, and we're a company, we're also a social enterprise, and we aim to level the playing field for students around the world who don't necessarily have the strategic networks that they need in order to get into today's economy. And what I mean by that is you have about 100 million students in emerging markets, places like the Middle East or India, Sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, who are super talented, who are getting great educations, not everybody, but a lot. And yet, one of the things that we need in today and tomorrow's economy is not just the hard and soft skills, but also the strategic networks, because the world is changing so fast these days that if you want to go into fintech or medtech or edtech or AI or any of these fields of the future, you need to be able to talk to people who are knowledgeable about those fields, both to identify what the opportunities are and the gaps are and how you can apply your skills and your knowledge to those sectors. So if you're a student in Jordan, for example, and you're studying engineering and you're getting a good education, but your school only has one dean of students, you don't even have career services, it's really hard to know what your options are when you graduate. And so what Localized does is we connect those students to global professionals anywhere who are working in the fields of the future and who share language and roots. So Jordanians to Jordanians, Indians to Indians, Tunisians to Tunisians, so that students can access what we call experts to guide you and employers to hire you. So we also bring on employers who are looking to either expand into these markets or who are operating in these markets or thinking about growing into these markets to really level the playing field for students around the world.
Part of the reason I'm so interested in what you do is last summer I was in Kenya with my son, who was taking photographs at this conference in Nairobi, and there was a young scientist there who was from a village in eastern Kenya, who had made his way to this conference and was super smart. We sat with him and my son was just talking about his school. And he said, after I leave here, I don't know what to do. I don't have the ability to come back to Nairobi. I don't have the money. And yet I have this education, but I have nothing to do. And so over this past year, my son and I have been trying to guide him and connect him, and it's hard. And so we are finally able to do that. And I think with you providing this kind of service, it will allow young people like that to maybe not leave. Maybe they don't have to leave their village, but to have an opportunity to learn and to flourish. And so I'm really excited to hear more about, maybe you can tell me like an example of how that's worked.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll take a step back and just share with you how the idea came about. I used to work at a media organization that operated very deeply in the Middle East, and we worked quite extensively in Palestinian society. And I was spending some time in a community in Palestine where the villagers were being surrounded by the wall that the Israeli government had built. And they were facing an impossible choice. They either were going to stay on their lands, but the young people in the community would have no mobility, no access to quality education and professional opportunities, or they would leave, but they would lose the fabric of their community and their heritage. So it was really a very unfair situation to be facing, and unfortunately is all too common. And at the same time, in my prior work, I had worked with Palestinian diaspora professionals all over the world, in Dubai and in London and Toronto and Silicon Valley, who wanted to give back even if they couldn't go back. And they were willing to give hundreds of hours of volunteer time because they felt so strongly about wanting to give back to the next generation. And this village that we were in actually had internet connection. So at the time, I sat with the community leaders who happened to all be women and said, what would it take for your young people to gain that expertise, gain that mentorship from these diaspora professionals who so deeply want to connect? And they came back and they said there are three conditions. They have to be linguistically localized, they have to be culturally competent, and they have to be excellent by any measure. And that began the process of thinking about, okay, how do you operationalize that? And then, frankly, how do you operationalize it in a scalable way? And so that was a couple of years of research that led to the creation of Localized and our model. So in a way, we were initially motivated by this question of what can you do if you have connectivity but low mobility, which is to the example you gave of this Kenyan scientist. If you have connectivity but low mobility and you're smart and you're capable and you're gaining the skills, where is the opportunity? And the good news in this generation, which is so different from 3 or 5 or 10 years ago, is that more and more companies are operating remotely. Now, remote can mean working from across the bridge, right, or a few miles away, but it can also mean from overseas. And we're seeing more distributed teams where you could be anywhere. So our team, for example, our QA, our quality assurance person, she's in Ramallah. And our UX UI designer is in Istanbul. And one of our sales and customer success people is in Cairo. And our CTO is in Austin. And our lead software developer is in Silicon Valley. So we're passionate about trying to create a reality, an environment where you don't have to choose between the community that you love and the professional opportunities that you want to pursue.
What kind of challenges have you encountered with operationalizing that? And how does it work for your own team? And what challenges do you have on your own team to actually make that work and for people to really get to know each other? I just think it's hard, right? So I would love to hear about what you've done.
So I've managed remote teams for over a decade. There are certain things that you have to know how to do. Number one, you do need to bring people together at certain intervals. You want to make sure to build in some time when you get together even digitally face-to-face via Zoom or Google Hangout to ask people how they're doing and build in a little bit of that time. The nice thing about remote teams is that, first of all, things can get done flexibly, right? So it means you can have a more diverse team. You can have more parents who have little children. One of our team members has a little baby, and it's no problem for us. You can get work done at different hours. Also, you know who's done the work and who hasn't, because if you're remote, there isn't that water cooler culture of just charming people into believing or sitting at your desk and having people believe you're getting stuff done, because you either have accomplished your goals or you haven't. You're either being productive or you're not. So there's some really nice things about remote work. And certainly for those who want to do their work in their pajamas, we're very flexible. In terms of the challenges of operationalizing, I think that, first of all, that only works when you have high performers. So remote gets harder when you have low performers, so you do have to be disciplined about only keeping high performers and being really, really rigorous about quality control in terms of a team. As we scale, we know that there are going to have to be local communities together where you have people in a concentrated form. So we recognize that for this stage, this works, and over time, that will likely evolve. In terms of the challenges for us in building Localized, there was a couple of years of research that went into Localized before we actually launched, which was to understand, first of all, who's out there, who's doing this, what are the models, how can we make this scalable, how can we make this work, getting to know our various user segments, the experts, the learners. Just to give you a sense of how we work as a company, we partner with universities, we partner with governments. So for example, in Tunisia, we have 32 of the 40 universities on our platform at the moment. We're operating in Jordan, we're operating in Egypt, and we work with universities, we work with ecosystems of entrepreneurs, we work with affinity-based organizations, so groups that are bringing together top diaspora professionals or local professionals in STEM and tech, And eventually we want to bring companies on, and that's where we monetize, is through recruitment and through building brand awareness for the companies as they're entering into markets. Let's say you have a ride-sharing company that wants to enter a new market. They're going to want to both recruit talent in that market, and they're going to want to build brand awareness. And so that's where we see the monetization. So in terms of where it's been wonderful have been the joy of our experts in being able to finally channel their care and their love and their concern to the communities they care about. But more than that, it's not just to the communities they care about. So for example, we have a Syrian HR expert on our platform who had set up career centers across Syria before the war. Then he got his PhD. He was at Stanford's career center. Now he works for a massively growing company in Silicon Valley, enormous. They're doubling and tripling in size every few weeks. He has decided that every Saturday morning for an 8-week period, he gets up somewhere between 4:30 and 6:30 in the morning, his time, and gets online onto Localized, and he offers his expertise to students around the world. Now, he was motivated to join to help Syrians, but he's delighted when there are Palestinians and Indians and Jordanians and Egyptians and Americans on the platform. He's absolutely happy to help anybody who can benefit from his expertise. So that's where it really works. Where it's hard for us, I would say some of the normal growing pains of a startup, particularly I would say being a female founder who's not 25, you know, I've got a kid, I don't fit into the stereotypical image of what a founder looks like. Plus we're working in emerging markets and we're on the intersection of career tech and ed tech. And so finding capital is always a challenge. So only 3% of investment capital goes to women. So 97% is going to men. Of that figure, majority goes to white women. A very, very small subset goes to women of color. You have to be somewhat exuberant and optimistic to be an entrepreneur, period. And so, you know, I'm proud that our team is beating certain odds in terms of bringing in investors that, you know, both institutional and individual. But I will say that it has been very eye-opening. We are not as far as we would like to be. And those numbers are really shocking in terms of the allocation of resources and what that means for the future of our society and the future of where solutions are coming from at early stage capital. It's always hard, and the numbers are not easy.
But I think, you know, me working for a creative agency and understanding the power of one's brand, I think you have done an amazing job of putting yourself out there and representing the brand of Localized in a way that appeals to investors, whereas I think sometimes startups don't focus on what some people call the froth because they're so dedicated to finding the money. And I think you've found a great balance by, you know, really representing yourself in a professional way, which then obviously then appeals to those people who are looking to spend money on growing someone's business. So kudos to you for that. My question is around, like, with AI, and a lot of people are talking about artificial intelligence, I think a lot of people don't know really what it is, but how do you think that's going to impact? It strikes me that most of your work is, and this may not be true, is around linking companies with remote workers, mainly in tech. And that could be, I'm misunderstanding, I don't know enough, and you can just tell me. And what will happen as a result of, like, automation of so many different things? Are you thinking about that, like, 10 years on, like, what is that going to look like? What is a workforce going to look like? And how can I play a role in this evolving workforce?
So I'm in a few networks that are thinking about the future of work on a global scale. And so it's an ongoing conversation. What does it mean? What's interesting in emerging markets, and that's such an overgeneralization, right? Because the MENA situation is different than India. And even within MENA, Jordan looks vastly different from Egypt. Just from a connectivity standpoint, Jordan is pretty much 100% connected with excellent high-speed internet. Egypt is not. That being said, there's a lot of opportunity for growth, things like the agri-tech industries, construction. I mean, if you think about a country like India, the country has so much to do when it comes to just building the infrastructure of the country, building out the roads, the sidewalks, the trash removal, the, you know, linking people to sanitary, you know, bathrooms and toilets and things like that, right? So there's an enormous amount of opportunity to do so much before people's jobs are going to get. In a way, India may be a decade or 15 years perhaps behind. I hate using the words ahead and behind. They're just different circumstances. But essentially, automation is not yet going to turn over the level of jobs and workers at the scale that it may in some of the fully developed economies, just because certain things have not yet even been built to be replaced. It really depends on the sector. And then there are new industries that are popping up, right? There's new ways of, you know, certainly with med tech and all of the innovations there, the infrastructure around that. India is having a growing middle class. So they're expecting to have a radical reduction of the number of the most abject poor and a dramatic increase in their middle class. And with that middle class will come a lot of consumption, a lot of services that will be demanded. So I think that jobs are going to be moving around in all kinds of ways. Climate change is, although of course I'm not happy about it, but at all, but adapting to the realities of climate change in a place like the Middle East, for example, where temperatures are rising such that you have to think differently about how you, when you're doing urban planning, how do you design a city? What materials do you use? What paint colors do you use? So in service of that, we on Localized have had a Palestinian American meteorologist who is an expert on these issues. He came, we did a spotlight in October on climate adaptation, energy and renewables. And he was one of several experts on the platform talking about where are their career opportunities. Not that anyone is happy or celebrating this, they're not at all. But, you know, one of the things that he'd shared with me was that in a place like Saudi Arabia, where things are, it's going to get so hot in the summer that you may need to have cooling stations outside for people to go to. You may have to think about a very reduced construction season when you can actually construct buildings. So everything is going to change, and there will be jobs that are going to be created as a result in order to mitigate and to navigate these changing circumstances. So we are very much, we're not exclusively focused on tech. We are focused on jobs that are meaningful, and we're not exclusively focused on remote jobs. We're focused on how do we equip students with the knowledge, the networks that they need to make informed choices about what their options are in today and tomorrow's economy. And that could be in medicine, that could be in agriculture, that could be in construction. Certainly our platform lends itself best to the ways in which those sectors cross technology, because it lends itself best to how somebody can exchange knowledge remotely or on a platform as opposed to in person. But we see a lot of transition and opportunity that will be very important for students to be thinking about so that they can contribute in the highest way that they want to in their communities in ways that will be both relevant and helpful to themselves and also to their countries, to their societies.
So if you close your eyes and you open them and it's 2 years on, you're well-funded and people are working, you're connecting people, what do you see? I mean, what I see is that you're giving people hope. And I think that's what I noticed working around the world and working with people in these remote areas, like they lose this kind of ebullience that children have, because you get to a certain age and you're like, oh, now I have, there's nothing for me to do. I got a pretty good education, but there's nothing. And so everything about you is about hope. It's about hope for the future. It's hope for the community. It's hope for the world. It's connecting people everywhere, beyond borders, beyond politics. So that's what I see. What do you see? Just nothing small.
No pressure. You know, so I think fundamentally we often build what we wished we had when we were young. And so for me, Localized is somewhat of a manifestation of that, of I'm always looking for role models. I'm always looking for people where I can say, hey, wow, if that person could do it, maybe it's possible for me. Right now I'm in a stage in my life where I'm looking for moms who are running tech companies or who are exiting tech companies and paying close attention to how they're doing. So for example, the founder of Care.com, that's somebody, I've never met her, she's not in my orbit, but I'm paying attention to the fact that she's done it, right? And I think that we naturally look for those anchors, those role models. Not everybody, but some people. And to me, that's very important. And to Najib Jarar, one of our experts on our platform, who's Jordanian, he works at Google in Dubai, and he attributes his career path to seeing a fellow Jordanian working at a company like Microsoft and just exploding open his sense of what's possible. And so finding those people, you don't have to have a deep mentorship relationship with them. It's not that you have to meet them every week. You just have to know, as soon as you know that something's possible, everything changes. It's like those runners, athletes, right? As soon as somebody breaks a world record, you often see then that many, many people will then break that same record, right? It's just knowing that it's breakable unlocks something for people psychologically. And for us, that's a lot of what we want to happen on Localized, is this sense of, okay, you're from Tunisia, I'm from Tunisia. You're from Kosovo, I'm from Kosovo. You're from Albania, I'm from Albania. You're from Brazil, you did this, I want to do this. Wow, how did you do it? How can I do it? What should I be paying attention to? And we're not trying to get people into silos, into ethno-national silos or anything like that. It's more like women helping women, or you know, people who know what it's like to go through something and then want to help give a leg up to the next generation without then closing the door on others. I grew up in Quebec during a time of deep recession. I'm from Montreal, and you couldn't get a job waiting tables with a PhD when I was young. And so I left. I ended up coming to the States, and it was eye-opening and mind-blowing to me, because when I first moved here, I imported my recession mentality to being here. My first summer in college, I'll never forget, I took whatever job I could find. I didn't bother to ask, what do I want to do? That was a very luxurious question. That wasn't an available question to me. It was just, take whatever job you can get and just suck it up, and that's just life, right? And we, you know, I wasn't poor, I wasn't homeless, but I had that mentality that your expectations, your horizon of opportunity and imagination was lower, and you didn't even notice that it was lower. And suddenly being around some of my classmates, my college mates, where they were being very discerning, they were asking themselves, what do I want to do? They were finding fellowships, they were negotiating terms for jobs that seemed outlandish to me, and they were freshmen, right? And I realized that I had internalized a recession mentality. I had imported that recession mentality, this idea that you just take what you can get, you don't ask questions, you don't step out of line, and you don't have the luxury of getting too creative or too clever or too smart. You just do whatever you need to do. And that's a mentality around the world for very logical and rational reasons. It's not because people don't have creativity and entrepreneurial spirits. It's because that's what the climate is conducive to. And it took me a while to shake that off. And once I did, I don't ever want to go back. But not only that, I think that there's something so freeing and so electrifying about suddenly realizing that you can create a new reality, not entirely at all, and with constraints and of course it's not a level playing field. With all of that, there are people out there doing extraordinary things, and being able to see them and interact with them and get feedback from them and mentorship from that, there's a lot of research about the impact of those proximate role models and those mentors and how much farther you can go just by knowing that there are those record breakers like you that somehow resemble you that are out there. My hope, my goal is that students on our platform find those proximate role models, advance in their careers, and then one day come back as those role models and are able to give back. And of course, we want to help people find jobs, and we want to help them find work and level the playing field. So years ago, I took a theater class that involved watching a number of directors, and there was one type of director that would essentially, the director would fold his or her arms and say, prove to me you can do this, with the assumption that you couldn't. Low expectations, pretty harsh and judgmental, and they didn't get much creativity out of their actors. And then the other type of director would come with the mentality of course you can do this, and now let's figure out how. And suddenly everything was unleashed. Suddenly everything was open, and the experimentation and the creativity and the innovation. That's also true in tech, that's true in life, that's true in business, right? Where if you have a mentality of it's possible, just it's possible, and then it's about how do we iterate, how do we find it, what's the strategic network? That's a fundamentally different starting point than prove to me you can do it, because my assumption is you can't. And so that's something that I think I've admired in the American, the mythology of the American dream. I have admired the optimism historically, maybe right now this isn't a moment where it's being exemplified, where there's this sense of what's possible. And to me, that's been very moving.
You know who you are? You unlock human potential. And you do that by talking about your own story, which then allows other people to think about their own story, to then realize that it doesn't matter how old you are or who you are. It's the people with whom you associate who give you the energy and the power and the passion to pursue your dream. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to talk to me. This has been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it, and excited to follow your podcast in general and your work.
Thank you.